above the horizontal.
Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball. Belt. Belt has scored. Belt has scored in the corner.
Welcome to Above the Horizontal, a podcast about the NRL. I'm your host, Bo Nicholson, on tonight's episode. We'll be picking our player of the week, announcing our wildcard awards for round four, talking about the biggest grand final turning points in our memory. Yes, we'll also be weighing in on the obstruction rule after yet more controversy in that space before hearing from the Big E, Owen Gibson, with his phenomenal tip of the week, and then finishing with our tips for round five and a bold prediction. It's actually a little bit of a Gibson attack tonight, because and apart from the Big E's inclusion, we've also got his brother Kieran Gibson. Hello, Gibbo. Who is your player of the round?
Hey mate, my player of the round is Tyrell Sloan. I'll mention him later in the pod as well, but yeah, I feel like he's not trying to be a hero, but he's just sticking to his strengths. He's not trying to be the difference every game, but or going in with that mindset, but he kind of is being like having a large effect on the result. He's sticking to his strengths, which is his support play and using his speed, bounce and fend to evade would-be tacklers. And he finished the game with 8 tackles for no misses, which has been a large criticism of his game. And yeah, he completely outshone Turbo.
Yeah, he's looking really, really good. He will also feature later on for me as well. We might have a very similar bold prediction potentially. But I think Hamiso is the most balanced and beautiful runner in the sport, but I think Tyrell Sloan would be in that conversation. And it's not just, you know, his top speed is obviously good. He's not quite in the Hamiso, Jason Saab kind of or cooler level with his top speed, but his ability to fend, swerve, and still maintain speed is really quite impressive. I think he's a wonderful athlete, so I hope that he does fulfill his potential and leaves no doubt in anyone's mind that he's a better footballer than Moses Mbai, which is of course an in joke from our group chat. My player of the round for round four, it's funny, we were talking last week with Chris about Scott Drinkwater and how Drinkwater would be an elite fullback because he is an elite attacking fullback. But if he could just get his defense to an average standard, he would be in that echelon of, probably a rep player, you know. And didn't he have a shocker against the Broncos in the wet, to be fair? But yeah, a lot of those criticisms that Friendy and Chris have spoken about before were, you know, he wasn't up for the contact or whatever else. And you know who tormented him? It was Adam Reynolds. Adam Reynolds kicked the Broncos to victory in a wet, when you have like a wet night, like right before kickoff, you got this really torrential rain. I reckon the good halfback sit there and go, cool, get on my back, boys. We are going to, like, you know, we're going to own this middle and then I'm just going to kick us to victory. And Adam Reynolds with short kicking game, with towering bombs, with spirals, with ones that he kicks in the belly so they kind of float a little bit. He was tormenting Drinkwater particularly, but also Murray Taulagi early in the game, which led directly to a try for Jesse Arthurs after a cutout pass from Fletcher Baker. So I think Adam Reynolds was hands down the best player on the field in that game. And I think maybe the player of the round. So I'm going to go with Mr. Reynolds. Kieran, I've got so many wild cards to choose from. I've prepared 2 and I could have a third one. Because I was telling you boys about when I was with the BE on Friday night at that game and there was a guy next to me that made me want to commit murder, just yelling the entire time. Big Cowboys fan, had no footy IQ, was just shocking. I just wanted to, you know, end him. I didn't. I was very good. I was professional in my support worker role with your brother. I've got so many wildcards to choose from. That's not one of them. But before I do mine, why don't we go with yours? What's your wild card this week?
I've got a Miles adage or a proverb. For mine, it goes to Super League legend Tyrell Sloan. I just mentioned him as my player of the round, but he's gone to a new level this season under Shane Flanagan, who's it's only four rounds into the season, but he's also proving some detractors wrong with early season form. Yeah, the Dragons got smashed by the Dolphins and they are 2-2, but I feel like the way that they play is testament to the proverb, another proverb that fans just want a sporting team to follow that can be competitive and give their all every week, and it's reaping rewards so far for the Dragons.
As one of the Shane Flanagan detractors, let's talk about that just for a moment. For me, it was never a matter of questioning his coaching ability. I was always fairly confident that he could take what is a fairly poor roster with some green shoots in it. You know, you've got obviously Ben Hunt, an elite playmaker in our sport. You've got a solid-ish forward pack. They've brought in a couple of journeyman-type players. They've got, you know, Tom Eisenhuth at lock at the moment, one of those sort of senior, good training kind of guys. And you've got those flashy outside backs, you know, your Zach Lomaxes, you've got your Tyrell Sloanes, you've got the Fine brothers in reserve grade at the moment. He was always going to make them better, I think. My biggest concern with him and why I count as a detractor is the fact that he's clearly a flog. He's a cheat, and I don't want him to have a first grade spot. But I did suspect, even though I expect the Dragons to do poorly this year, and I still do expect them to do poorly, I did expect him to do an okay job as coach. Do you? I had them for the wooden spoon this year, the Dragons. Where did you have them at the start of the year? And like, do you think they will meet your expectations or maybe exceed them or fall short?
I had them as the wooden spooners, and I haven't been watching heaps, but the way the Titans have gone, I'll say that the Dragons won't get the spoon.
Yeah, the Titans aren't doing any favors, are they?
I mean, it is easy to say now, given that they've had no luck with injuries and whatever else.
Yeah, that's right. I do find it kind of ironic because he is one of the worst commentators that I've ever heard, Shane Flanagan. And we've heard that Zach Lomax is on the outer. They're going to cut short his contract by a couple of years to have him finish at the end of the year, possibly earlier. He's on about 800K. He's a winger at the moment. And they're trying to ship him off and hopefully get a good player in. And they don't need another winger. As I said, they've got the Fine brothers in reserve grade. Christian Tuipulotu just scored four tries in reserve grade as well. So they're not short of outside backs. They need forwards. And I find it kind of ironic that the man that's on the outer that could be an option as a direct swap at a similar kind of value is Nelson Asofa Solomona, who Shane Flanagan won't be able to pronounce his name because he calls him Nelson Asofa Mona whenever he's in commentary. So I think that will be hilarious if that transpires, that Zach Lomax ends up at, say, Melbourne, which I don't think they really need him anyway, and Nelson ends up the Dragons under Shane Flanagan. Anyway, that's not my wildcard award. I had two that I was going to use. I'll just give you two. Why not? The one that was my backup was the trip to Auckland Hospital award, which goes to Matt Croker after having his ankles completely snapped in half by Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. I don't know if you caught that one, Kieran, but it was just a regular kick return from Roger, and age shall not weary them because you know the left foot is coming from Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. He squares you up and he's either going to accelerate straight or it's going to be a big left foot. It's not going to be a right foot step. And he just does. Matt Croker looked drunk trying to, it just completely fell on his ass. It was a wonderful step. Good signs from Roger, who I thought was really good at fullback. No, but my top wild card, the one I thought you might take, in fact, is the That's Not a Tackle, That's a Miracle award, which goes to Tommy Dearden.
Oh,
wowee. We talked about Drinkwater having a shocker after copping some heat on this panel last week, in fact, but he threw an intercept pass straight to noted athlete and representative winger Selwyn Cobo, and he was chased down brilliantly by Tom Dearden. When the Cowboys decided to move away from their previous co-captains, Jason Taumalolo and Big E legend Chad Townsville, and make it Tommy Dearden and Ruben Cotter, a few people were kind of like, oh, like, whatever, I don't know, like, whatever. I was really happy with that. because that to me signals intent that the Cowboys are going to be an effort club. And you mentioned earlier that fans, win, lose, or draw, what you want the most, especially if you're a losing team generally, is competitiveness. And Tommy Dearden, just that tackle on Cobbo is probably an all-timer. Like, it's one of those ones we're going to talk about in the same breath as Scott Sattler on Todd Byrne, on Darren Albert on Matt Sears in that semifinal in 1997. These great tackles that are made across time. And it didn't mean much because the Cowboys didn't do shit after it, which was probably the most disappointing fact, actually. It should have lifted them, but it didn't. But I think Tommy Dearden, as a Cowboys fan, as a Queensland fan, that's inspirational stuff. You are also a Cowboys and Queensland fan. How do you feel?
Yeah, I like it exactly as you said that, and Todd Payton said it in his press conference, he's disappointed that the boys didn't have a better reaction from that and kind of let it motivate them and build a fire within them to see that Dearden's trying his heart out here and he's still fighting. Like, why aren't we doing the same? Why aren't we putting in the same effort? Yeah, I hope it's like a moment, one of the youngest in the team. I'm not sure how old Dearden is, but
like 23.
Yeah, he's willing to stand up as a captain. Yeah, and he's willing to stand up and be that kind of leader already. Like, I hope some of the older guys take notice and go, shit, like this guy is controlling all that he can control right now, which is how much effort he puts in. He's maybe not the most talented player at all times, but that's the kind of leader we need, someone that shows us when we're doubting ourselves, when we're doubting our ability to execute to the best of our strengths. We know what we can control, and that's our effort, and that's exactly what Dearden showed. I hope that the boys, they didn't take that message on Friday night, but I hope they take that message into the next game.
It didn't turn out to be a turning point, as it were, but for our hot take, or a big take this week, we decided to talk about biggest grand final turning points that we can remember. Obviously, we can't remember back in the 1960s or 70s. But it was a question that you came up with, and I assume you've got a few grand finals on your brain, and you don't have to look very far to see a really big one last year, which, well, there's probably a series of them last year. You know, Cleary's 40-20, James Fisher-Harris and Moses Leota coming back onto the field, Cogger replacing Luai. These were all turning points that turned that game sharply in the Panthers' favor, and they ended up winning their third in a row. Kieran, are there any other big turning points in grand finals that you can remember that you want to point out?
I very nearly went with the 2013 grand final. In my opinion, James Maloney was largely the difference. Well, I had three players in that game that I would say moments in the game, they completely changed the momentum in that grand final. Sonny Bill Williams, James Maloney, and Michael Jennings' Superman try was just outrageous.
Phenomenal, Vaughn. Phenomenal.
Yeah. To put your body on the line like that and to even chase, like, that's Tom Dearden type effort, just the type of willing to do anything for the team to get the victory. But I went with the 2015 grand final. I thought there's
I knew you were gonna do it. I knew.
It's easy for me to go back to this moment just because I would have had to have rewatched some of the other grand finals to accurately, at least in my mind, give a nice moment to pick. And this grand final is obviously very heavy in my memory, given that I support the Cowboys. But so it's about the 2015 grand final. I personally think the grand final was lost at halftime with Wayne Bennett's message to instruct the Broncos to kick the ball out at every opportunity and wind the clock down and back their defense. And to be honest, it would have paid off in my mind if not for Kyle Felt.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see it is Kyle Felt, whilst he wasn't alone, he gave the Cowboys the opportunity to score after the siren. Mm-hmm. And he scored that try. Obviously, he didn't have to do a heap in that moment. But on 78 minutes and 44 seconds on the clock, Corey Parker plays the ball to McCulloch, who hands it off to the would-be Clive Churchill medalist now, Anthony Milford, who he jinked and stepped through three players. Obviously, the Cowboys defense was ridiculously tired at this point, but he steps through three players before Felt strips the ball from him just past the halfway line.
Mm-hmm.
And when Felt stripped that ball, I was like, holy fuck, like that was the only thing that could possibly be done in that moment for the Cowboys to have any chance. And then Hunt recovers the ball. And at that moment, when Hunt recovered the ball, I was like, okay, I kind of think this is it. Like that was the first proper moment where I was like, I might just have to accept defeat here now. And it pained me so much. And then literally 2 seconds later, Felt not only strips the ball from Ben Hunt, but he has the presence of mind as a 23-year-old in his first grand final, playing for his boyhood club under immense pressure for the potential to win the Cowboys their first premiership. He has the presence of mind to not only knock the ball out of Hunt's hand, but to knock it backwards towards his try line so it's not a knock-on, and recovers the ball. To me, that is amazing. There was then 64 seconds left on the clock. The Cowboys reenacted a freaking epic Marvel-like revival, showing the good guys can fight until the end and win. That sequence of play where he strips the ball from Milford and then Hunt, I have to wonder how many people, including those Cowboys players, I have to wonder if some of those Cowboys players had given up, if they truly believed, like Felt believed in that moment. The Broncos had a full set of six up their sleeve. If they can just walk up to our defensive line and protect the ball, like that had to pretty much be the moment where Felt did it, where there's a lone attacker from the Broncos stranded trying to make yardage downfield in broken play. The Cowboys probably don't get their chance if Felt doesn't do that second tap of the ball in that exact moment. And so in my opinion, it is up there in the conversation for biggest turning point in a grand final. And obviously we know the rest, how it goes, the rest is history, but that was Kyle Felt's third year in first grade as well. Yeah, I think it's pretty understated how pivotal those two bats of the ball were to the Cowboys going on to win. And then obviously his kickoff, obviously that was good coaching. I think Paul Green encouraged it, but he had to back himself to get it right and not kick the ball out. And it obviously paid off for the Cowboys.
It's worth mentioning that you say that Kyle Felt was in his, third year of first grade, but he was in and out of the team that year. He wasn't the first choice right winger for the Cowboys that year. If memory serves, it was Matthew Wright. And I think Tato Monga was also in the squad as well. So Felt was not the first choice winger, and he had to earn that spot. I think when one of them got suspended or injured and he got a chance and they just took that chance. Gosh, I wish he would play like that now. I'm kind of in the camp that Simi Valame should have his spot at the moment. But
yeah,
that was an incredible moment. I've got one that would rival it. And I would say this was the greatest grand final of all time until the 2015 grand final, and then maybe until the 2023 grand final. But this was the 1989 grand final between Canberra and Balmain Tigers. And we covered it in the very early days of this podcast with you, me, and Miles Stedman. So basically, the game situation. Canberra have been in the grand final before in 1987 and lost. They lost to the Seagulls. They'd never been in the grand final apart from that. They started in like 1982. The Tigers had won a few premierships over the years. They'd been in a bunch of grand finals as recently as the year before, 1988, where they lost to the Bulldogs. Balmain raced to a 12-2 lead at halftime, which in 1989 terms, you know, it's a dusty, muddy Sydney Football Stadium. This is a 12-2 is a significant lead in 1989 football, but then began a gritty and pretty ugly, frankly, second half, if we're being real. And there are two turning points that I can speak to as to how Balmain lost this game. With a 12-8 lead and maybe 15 minutes left on the clock, Balmain coach Warren Ryan takes arguably the best prop in the game off the field, Steve Blocker Roach, to bring on, yes, the experience, but far less capable Kevin Hardwick. That will do me. Still, they continue to hold out a Raiders side with the likes of Gary Belcher, Mal Meninga, Ricky Stewart, Bradley Clyde, Steve and Kevin Walters, and Laurie Daly. They even get a penalty goal with about 6 minutes left. They kick that, so it becomes 14-8. Then, when presented with an opportunity to go 7 points in front with less than 5 minutes on the clock, Benny Elias has two field goal attempts in the space of about 40 seconds. One is charged down, I believe, by Mal Meninga. The other is a horrible shank a la Aiden Caesar on the weekend against the Eels. Except Caesar goes over the crossbar. Benny Elias crashes into the crossbar. And then it comes back and it's knocked on by an 18-year-old Tim Brasher. So the Raiders have the ball from the scrum. There is a subsequent penalty to march them downfield. And then they score a John Ferguson try. They kick the goal. Extra time period is basically all Canberra Raiders from that point. They go on to win 19-14, including one of the great grand final tries to Steve Jackson, starting one of rugby league's great dynasties, where the Raiders won in 89, 90, and 94. They were runners-up in 1991 to the Panthers. And in the same moments, Balmain's premiership window effectively closed, because guys like Wayne Pearce, Benny Elias, Paul Sirenin, Steve Roach, they were all starting to get towards the back end of their careers. They never featured in a grand final again until they were the West Tigers in 2005. So huge turning point moment, I think, in history. I obviously don't remember it from seeing it live. I was 1 year old, but because we did cover it for this podcast, I do remember it quite well. And watching the game, it's just amazing thinking back to Warren Ryan taking off Steve Blocker Roach, and he was furious, Blocker. He was furious at that. And then Benny Elias crashing into that crossbar with that field goal attempt. If he kicks it, they're 7 points in front, they win. And they win the last Balmain Tigers premiership. But alas, not to be. Huge turning points, I think. Can you remember that game, how we covered it?
I can remember some. I think it was the game where, I want to say, Paul Sirenin had like a pretty big moment in the game as well. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember it very well.
That was in the first half, and the Tigers were dominating in the first half. They had a great team back then. Gary Freeman in his first season in Australia as a 26-year-old, Tim Brasher in the centres, Gary Jack at the fullback, Blocker, Ann Sirenin, Wayne Pearce, Benny Elias, great team. Speaking of great teams, the Panthers, a new dynasty, they've got three premierships in a row, and they were included in a pretty controversial event on the weekend, rather on Thursday, against the Roosters, where Joey Manu scores a really good try in the right-hand corner. But the try is disallowed because Jared Wairia-Hargreaves has run through the line, which he's supposed to do as a lead runner, didn't make contact with any defenders, but stops at about the try line, where Dylan Edwards, in my personal opinion, could have made an effort to get around him or avoid that contact, did not avoid the contact, fell over. Would he have made it? Would he have not? That's up for discretion. But the black and white ruling apparently decided that was no try, despite the fact that the try was scored about 30 meters away from where he was taken out and maybe about 5 seconds after he was taken out. So it would have been tricky for him to get there. What's your view on this? Because I remember listening to the press conference afterwards. Obviously, Trent Robinson, the Roosters coach, was not happy with the call, as you could expect. But even Ivan Cleary himself said, look, we get too black and white with rulings and we always get a bit unhappy. He said something like that.
Yeah.
What's your view on this? Because, first of all, how do you feel about that specific example? But then how do you feel about the idea of the rules being too black and white versus discretionary? What do you think would be better?
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer discretionary. It's never going to be perfect. Decoy runners are such a huge part of league, and I can't remember who the decoy runner was that Dylan Edwards kind of feigned to make more contact or make out that the contact was more significant than what it really was.
Wairia-Hargreaves.
Okay, yeah. Wairia-Hargreaves goes through the gap. Like, for me, he does his job. I guess he can keep going, but I guess that he has a bit of responsibility to completely get out of the way. But Dylan Edwards also kind of initiates that. Dylan Edwards can make more of an effort to kind of, if he actually thought he could get there, to actually try and stop the try. And as you say, it was 30 meters away. Like, is he really going to get there and stop the try? I don't think so. But even on Friday night, it wasn't really adjudicated in a black and white manner, because if it had been the Panthers, didn't they have a try allowed that was very similar?
Tupanua was taken out. So, and the difference being there is the lead runner took out Tupanua on his outside shoulder in the defensive line. So again, so he hasn't, like JWH, like you say, he did his job. He got through the defensive line without obstructing someone in the defensive line, therefore allowing the integrity of the defensive line to be unblemished. So at the moment that Satili Tupanua is taken out on his outside shoulder, it does make a difference to the defensive line's integrity. I don't understand how you can allow one and not the other.
And it sounded like Ivan Cleary was agreeing, like without actually saying that he agrees. But yeah, I mean, it sounded like he understood where Trent Robinson was coming from with the fact that the way that it's ruled black and white, it just doesn't really work. At least, yeah, I mean, I'm of the same opinion.
Yeah. I think when you have, there are things that need to be black and white, right? I don't know. If you spear tackle a bloke and they land on their head, you want that guy sent off, right? And you want the judiciary to be following black and white rulings. And but there is still room for discretion, I feel. Like, for example, Latrell Mitchell was copping some heat for knocking Josh Adokar out when Josh Adokar was attempting to score a try. Now, he had already been taken out by the defender. But Latrell Mitchell was in the process of getting down low to try and get in the way of the ball. So, like, Latrell Mitchell can't win. If he doesn't make that effort, he's too fat and lazy. If he does make the effort, oh, he's being reckless and careless. And it's like, mate, his hip hit Adokar in the head. It's like, what do you want him to do? What do you want him to do? At that point, but like the black and white rule would be, well, it was late and it hit him in the head, so penalty. But a discretionary ruling would be, well, hang on a second. Like, what do you actually want him to do? Do you want him to just stand by and let them score the try? Is that the product? Is that the game we want? The best games, in my opinion, are the ones where it's like a State of Origin game or it's a grand final where, like, yeah, the referee is getting the knock-ons and the offsides and the head-high tackles, like getting the black and the white stuff right, but also having a feel for the game, because I don't want rugby league to be reffed by AI, you know? Like, if it gets to a point where AI is strong enough and good enough that it can do black and white rulings and officiate a sport, do we want that? Is that the end goal? I don't think so. I think what should have happened with the Dylan Edwards JWH one is that JWH technically stops in front of where Dylan Edwards was running. Okay, but he's done his job to get through the initial line. So at that point, surely it's discretionary. Now, would Dylan Edwards have been able to make it? I don't know. That's up to the ref. Maybe they looked at all that and maybe they decided that he was a reasonable chance of being able to stop that try being scored. Maybe that's where they landed. But to me, it feels like we're going a bit too black and white. It's easy to shit on refs, but I would prefer trusting when the refs particularly has earned that trust. A lot of them don't earn that trust. But when they've earned that trust, they have a good feel for the game, a good rapport with the players. I want the refs to get the big stuff right and then the rest of it be feel and discretion. And maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. But I kind of agree with you on that. Let's take a short little break. We'll hear from the Big E and we'll be back on the other side of this.
G'day, boys. This is the Big E. I am going to do my Big E Benoni tip of the week today. The first tip for this match, the first match this Thursday night, Melbourne Storms is playing against the Brisbane Broncos at Amy Park at Melbourne Storms home ground. Yeah, the first one I tipped as Storms, and then the second one I would tip the Roosters against the Bulldogs. Sorry, money. And I'm also going to tip the Newcastle Knights for my boyfriend. And also I'm going to tip the Warriors against the Rabbitohs. Actually, I tipped many seagulls for my big man, Mr. Stedman, the big ass, Woodward, against the Pandas. Actually, I tipped the Redcliffe Dolphins to win, and also tipped the Cowboys, and tipped the Raiders. That is my Big E Binomino tip of the week, and also bold prediction again. It's actually the same one again. Jack Tannisville will get four tries again. And actually, also, other one, I would say Marco Silva will get three tries. Maybe. All right, that is the biggie, boys. That is my bold prediction. Oh, yeah, and also my wild card. Yeah, I said congratulations to West Tigers to win again by 1 point. That's good, though. Anyway, that's me. That is Biggie being on the tip of the week for today. Let's wait and see who's going to win. And, yeah, Cowboys 50+. And yes, hello, Luca. And also, a shout out to Phoebe. Biggie out.
Thank you to the Big E for his phenomenal tip of the week. Kieran, your brother, he's got a thing with Chad Townsend at the moment. He's decided that Chad Townsend's going to score four tries this week. He only scored less. He only fell short by four tries last week against the Broncos. Chad Townsville, as he calls him. So hopefully Chad Townsville can pile on the tries against. I'll tell you what, if you're going to score four tries against anybody, it's the Gold Coast Titans, to be fair. So maybe the Biggie's on us. He's also got Mike Acevo down for three tries, but he's also tipped the Raiders to beat the Eels. So if he gets any of that stuff right, the Oracle, the Biggie, good luck to him. But I think we might need to talk him out of the whole Chad Townsend four tries thing, because I don't think that's happening, Biggie.
I'll be impressed if he scores another four tries before the end of his career. So I'm not sure it's
going to happen. Me too. Let's talk about round five. Kieran, I'll give you a minute or so. Why don't you run through your tips for us?
I've gone the Storm to beat the Broncos down in Melbourne. I think that home ground advantage, I think it'll be a close game. I'll say Storm by 4 points or less. The Roosters over the Bulldogs. Knights or Dragons? I'm tossing up still, but I'm going to go the Knights. The Rabbitohs I only have my tips here, so I've gone the Rabbitohs, but whoever they're playing
against the Warriors. Rabbitohs against the Warriors Accor Stadium.
So the Warriors are, yeah, for me, like quite a well-oiled machine. They just kind of are good at grinding teams down. And I don't know. I'm going Rabbitohs just because I think that win will put a fair bit of wind in their sails from last week, even though it wasn't the prettiest at times. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go the Panthers over the Seagulls, the Tigers to beat the Dolphins, just because I think the Tigers have the better defense and if the Dolphins aren't there defensively, we know that they can just tend to roll over if defensively they're not on. I'll, on the back of Tiger defense, I'll say they'll win. The Cowboys to beat the Titans. Although, to be honest, I'm not going to lie, I did think twice about this despite how heavy Cowboys are as favorites. But no, I'll say the Cowboys and the Raiders to beat the Eels.
Interesting. We've gone different on a few, actually. So I also have tipped the Storm against the Broncos. Like you, I think home ground advantage. No Reese Walsh. Cameron Munster returns with Jerome Hughes. A few factors there for the Storm, I think. The Bulldogs and the Roosters. I think the Roosters, I'm pretty comfortable with that one. I think that one might be a bit of a carve-up. The Knights, I've tipped against the Dragons. I expect that to be pretty good too. I liked in the preseason, I saw Jackson Hastings and Jack Cogger as a combination. I thought the team looked the best when the Knights had that combination. And when they tried Cogger, Gamble, when they tried Hastings, Gamble, when they tried Will Price in there around about, I didn't think it looked as good. So I'm happy with this combination. I'm going to go for the Knights. I went for the Warriors against the Rabbitohs. I was very tempted to go for the Rabbitohs at home, but I just like the Warriors more as a team. And they've had a couple of outs, the Warriors. They're missing Kurt Capewell with concussion protocols. And Luke Metcalf had that really bad injury that will take him out till late in the season. But they've replaced those guys with Murata Neokure and Tamare Martin. I don't think they lose a lot.
Oh, wow.
And Chans Nikel-Klukstar comes in at fullback. And I think Roger did a really great job against the Knights. But Chans, I think the team looks better with Roger in the centers and Chans at fullback. Just that little bit of class on the end of block play. So I'm going to go for the Warriors. Panthers against the Seagulls, same as you. Geez, they were impressive. Brad Schneider just fit in beautifully, and they welcome back James Fisher-Harris. A debut for the Tigers, Latu Fainu on the bench will be making his debut. I too am going to go for the Tigers against the Dolphins. I think the same reason as you. I trust their defense a little bit more. I thought they showed a lot of fight against the Eels. They had every reason to pack it in on the weekend, and they didn't on Easter Monday. So I'm kind of impressed with them, and I want to see them do well. Cowboys against the Titans. Gee whiz. The Titans, they got some stuff going on. I do like they got Aaron Clark starting at lock. I think that's a good move for them. And they would do well, I think, to target Fini Fuiaki on the edge. I think he's a bit vulnerable if he's playing 80 minutes. Jake Granville's 200th game. Hopefully he's last. I'm sort of hoping the Cowboys have just been giving him games to get him to 200 and then fuck him off. But Cowboys for me, I expect a pretty big victory there as well. And the last game, I went for the Eels. And I'm surprised that I did. I'm finding it difficult to explain. I think Bailey Simonson improves that team a lot in the centers compared to Morgan Harper. And I think, I don't know, losing to the Tigers, it might spur something. The Eels have a way of doing these kind of things, and I expect them to go to Canberra and put up a really good fight. So I'm going to go for the Eels. So we've gone a little bit different there. Let's hope that I am more successful than you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I got 2 out of 8 last round. But you're making me question that Raiders-Eels game. The Raiders' spine on paper is pretty atrocious, I think.
Yeah, it really is. Although Rapinoe had a beautiful pass on the weekend, left-to-right pass to James Schiller late in the game, but it was still wonderful stuff. Something I didn't know that he really had in his game.
Sorry, I should excuse Rapana from that. To be fair, he is pretty... I think he, if he's not the most skillful, he's definitely always putting in a lot of effort at least. Mm-hmm. So that's the least you can ask.
Yeah, and the problem for the Raiders is they got to 18-0 against the Sharks, who the previous week got rolled by the Tigers. Their confidence would have been low. Their forwards were going nowhere. Nico Hines and Trindle were not able to get any front foot ball. And then, like, Fogarty... Fogarty should be like, cool, we're winning by 18 points. Let's kick to corners. Let's Chad Townsend this. Like, just bomb it into the corner every time and just make them work it out of there. Let's blunt them. Let's play error-free football. Let's go through the middle. But instead, they were just spinning the ball too much. They got a bit fancy. They dropped the ball a bunch. They let the Sharks work their way down the field. And when they get the front foot, guys like Hines, they have the talent. It was very disappointing from the Raiders, so I can't tip them. I've got to go for the Eels. Anyway, I got 4 out of 8 last week, so maybe I'm not the best person to listen to either. I think I was the only one that tipped the Tigers, though, so I'll take the credit for that. And we certainly didn't get our bold predictions last week.
My bold, the Dolphins to win by 20 points at least against the Titans, and I think they were winning by 20, and then the Titans scored.
Got a late try, Yeah, they won by 16. You were close. You were close. I did not get my ball prediction. I can't even remember what it was, but I certainly didn't get it. But it's another week. Kieran Gibson, thank you very, very much for joining me for this episode. Thank you to the Big E for his contribution. Miles Stedman is literally gallivanting. Well, he was in Fiji earlier today. He's now on a plane. Chris and Friend is on a plane tomorrow morning to Bali. So we won't see Friendy for a couple of weeks. And Chris was unable to join us because of work. So thank you, Kieran, for joining me for this episode. Before you go, can you give me a bold prediction for round 5?
Yes, I have. I don't know that I've tipped this, but I guess that in my tips category for each team that I've gone for, I don't know that I've tipped this many home teams. So I'm going to say at least 6 home teams to win this round. And I guess it's a bit bolder because it goes against my tips.
Let's hope the Cowboys are one of them because they are playing at home this week. My bold prediction is that both fullbacks will score in the Knights and Dragons game. And I think... I don't know if that's bold enough. I'm not really sure. But Tyrell Sloan's scoring tries left, right and center. And I expect if the Knights are to win, like I think they will, that Kalen Ponga will be heavily involved. And I'm hoping that he scores a try. So that's my bold prediction for this week. Kieran, thank you very much. And thank you to all the listeners. We hope you have enjoyed this show. If you have, please subscribe. We very much appreciate anyone that does subscribe to Above the Horizontal. And tell a friend, you know, we've got a little bit of rugby league chat. We like to have little very strongly held opinions, but also have a little bit of fun along the way. So please recommend this show to a friend. That would be a big help. And make sure they all subscribe too, because then they can go about the horizontal next week. But until then... Above the Horizontal is a rugby league podcast by the fans and for the fans. It's produced by our entire team of former writers for Real Sport, including Daniel Friend, Christopher Waring, Miles Stebbin, Kieran Gibson, and me, Bo Nicholson. We'd love it if you could support us by telling a rugby league fan about us so they can go above the horizontal as well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.